If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. So it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Welcome to Beautiful Humans, the social change cast, where behavior analysis and social justice collide.
Join us as we aim to move the needle on personal and social change by tapping into the beautiful humans inside of all of us.
Follow us on Spotify, Apple, or whatever medium you prefer to make sure you never miss an episode.
You can find us on Instagram at Beautiful Humans Change and on Facebook at Beautiful Humans, the social change cast.
If you're interested in supporting this podcast,
go to www.patreon.com. All right, welcome back, beautiful humans. This is Erin.
And it's Denisha.
Thank you all for joining us again for another episode. We're glad to be here.
Yes, it's been a while, yeah, huh, Erin?
Yeah, too long. Moving to this two-week thing, I said I called you a stranger when we signed on. It was like, I feel like we've both been so busy.
So. Yeah, life has definitely been happening for the both of us.
for sure. So, as we prepare, you know, prepared for this episode this week, you know, we're thinking about moving into one of the most celebrated U.S. holidays. And so we wanted to talk about the U.S. holiday that we celebrate of Thanksgiving, provide some insight. And so a lot of you may be wondering why Social Justice and Behavior Analysis podcast may be talking about that specific holiday, like what's the big deal? And so we will explain that to you, I assure you. But first, as always, you know, we talked about us being busy. You know, we always just check in at the beginning, give you a little insight. So Denisha, how have you been? What's been up?
I have been good. Work. You can cue Rihanna here at this moment, but yeah, life has been good. Just really busy and trying to find a footing right now. What about you? You have some changes coming up, some exciting things.
I do. Life's been busy too. It's getting near the end of, as a professor, at the end of the semester, everything starts to kind of settle in and get slammed. And then I'm also moving to the beautiful state of sunny Florida here very soon. So
I'm so jealous.
You know, you say that until it's like July or August, and I'm like, I'll feel like I'm dying.
And yeah.
You'll be having like nice, you know, being able to sit outside and, you know, in nice old Inner Harbor or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also say that until hurricane season as well.
Oh, yes.
Oh, man. So.
Exactly. So yeah, lots of stuff happening. It's been good though. Been good. Lots of positive stuff happening. So yeah.
Good.
Yeah. All right. Good. Yeah. So let's jump in. So we're going to talk about Thanksgiving, the holiday commonly known as Thanksgiving. So I kind of wanted to do like a little reflection thing with the audience, if that's okay with you, kind of to pull some thoughts and feelings about what, you know, Thanksgiving means to everybody. And so so if you're listening to this, I want you to kind of pause for a moment. Don't, like, if you're driving, like, don't close your eyes, don't do like full mindfulness or anything, but think about living in, you know, in America, and, you know, these certain holidays are celebrated in your community and your family, and Thanksgiving is typically one of those. And so take a moment to reflect back to your past around this time of year. You know, as a child, did your family celebrate Thanksgiving? And, you know, what activities did you usually participate in? Was there a big meal, maybe like a turkey or stuffing, pumpkin pie of some sort? Or did relatives and extended family, did you all get together from time to time? Maybe there were like local parades or watch a big parade on television. maybe images of a giant inflatable turkey wearing a pilgrim hat come to mind, bring back many memories. Or maybe your family gathered around a TV and watched a big football game or attended a big football game. You know, and then think about school and elementary school and middle school and what you were kind of taught in different grades and about the holiday. Did you make, like, in kindergarten little hand, like, cut out hand turkeys with colorful feathers? And, you know, what were the narratives that you were told? How were you, what were you taught that the Thanksgiving story was? You know, maybe stories of Native Americans and pilgrims sharing a giant meal together in some sort of celebration, you know, of sharing land and resources. You know, just think back to what that meant and how we're taught what Thanksgiving has been. So Denisha, when I said all that stuff, what stuff came to mind for you?
Well, you know, I started to think about my Thanksgivings as a child. And for me, it was always a time for family. We came together, we shared a big meal. As an adult, it equals like an off day. We were talking about school. I remember doing the turkeys with my hand. And that came to mind. I don't remember there truly being a connection with my family to the holiday. Like for us, it was just about a meal, coming together as a family, and not really even a full awareness of like, well, why is this an actual holiday? Just that this isn't holiday. This is a holiday that we participate in and we sit down and we fellowship with one another. Yeah.
That's interesting. Cause a lot of those same things, I mean, obviously I, you know, I wrote that. So a lot of these things, you know, images that came to mind were things that I remembered, but as a young children, I remember, or as a young child, I remember, and I can't remember if it was like family that I learned this from, or if it was school or where that came from, but, learning about like English settlers, Plymouth Rock, all of that, and learning that whole story. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the exact details of what I was taught, but it was essentially, you know, European settlers came and, you know, built colonies and made friends with Native Americans. If I want to boil it down to like the simplest, like, I know that this is what I was taught kind of thing, and images mm-hmm. of like cartoon Indians with feathers in their hats, like shaking hands. And I remember making like feathered, thing. I don't even know what you would call them. Headbands, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and in school, or like the pilgrim hats with construction paper and stuff like that. So I know that those narratives were taught, at least where I grew up, very, very much in school specifically too, as like a history lesson.
Yeah.
In elementary school. Definitely. So.
Yeah. I remember being taught about like the food that they ate and like certain messages about like who provided what food. Yeah. And so I think as, you know, getting older and looking or trying to look into the history of Thanksgiving a little bit more, seeing some of the things that we're not necessarily taught in a manner that were factual, that was factual. And obviously that was kind of hard to do because there's only one record of, you know, what we know as Thanksgiving to this day. And that record reflects a harvest festival of sorts, not necessarily Thanksgiving dinner, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's good for us as we go into the show tonight to talk about, you know, what we learned and then what part of what we learned might not have been reflective of the truth, and being able to distinguish between truth and myth from the past.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Definitely. And you had brought up the term whitewashing of history. Can you explain that a little bit for the listeners?
Yeah. So this just goes back to like me recalling some of the teachings and just like who was in charge of what. And it was kind of like explained. And I don't know if you can recall this being part of your teaching or not, or if any of our listeners can recall this being part of our teaching. But essentially, the English settlers provided food to the native people, and how nice of them for, you know, wanting to sit down with the natives and, you know, share a meal and tell them that we're friends. But a lot of what gets left out of the story is that the English settlers brought disease. They actually stole food from the natives, and that there was ongoing strife between, you know, the English settlers when they came. They tried to conform their religion, and they wanted to essentially make them Christian, because the English settlers felt like they had so much to offer to these quote unquote people who had no type of appropriate culture in what they were viewing for themselves. Like for the English settlers, who they were right. And they wanted to assimilate those that were already here before they got here. And so that's what I think of when I think about whitewashing, just being able to retell that story and leave out some integral parts, especially when it comes down to like why they even were together in the first place for Thanksgiving, because, you know, then they were afraid. They were afraid. The indigenous people felt like the English settlers, because of the things that they had been doing, were going to try to start a war. So they went there to like check it out. And essentially what they saw is, oh, they were like celebrating something of some sort. And so they went and they got food for them and brought it. And, you know, they had some dinner, essentially. And that's what we know as the first Thanksgiving, but it was essentially the harvest celebration. So,
there are definitely a lot of details that were left out, especially when, you know, I think about what I learned back in elementary school or what I was taught as a very young child, as far as disease. And I mean, we learned about settlers and coming and building colonies, but I definitely think there was a lot left out in terms of war, or just the struggle between the two. If anything, that came a little bit later, maybe in like U.S. history in high school or something like that. But even then too, I think that it was a lot was left out from everything that I've been reading in preparation for this episode. And then prior to that, about just learning about experiences of those of different identities. And so this being one of those, is that when Indigenous people think of Thanksgiving, they might be thinking of something drastically different than all of those things that we kind of just recalled when we think about Thanksgiving. Right. And so, you know, thinking about like the disease and essentially, you know, genocide and settler colonialism and, you know, systematic extermination. That was a term that you had put in the show notes. And I thought that was really powerful, because it brings to light like the true gravity of the situation. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the story about what we know, or not what we know, but the actual story of when English settlers got here, that speaks to just colonization, basic cut dry colonization. It was genocide because so many people died from those diseases. And when we start to even think about the fact that they wanted to kind of come over here and make the natives into new people, essentially they wanted them to assimilate to their culture. Even if people survive that, that's still a form of genocide, and the genocide comes in the form of their culture dying too. And so,
I made that distinction. That's, I think that's really important.
Definitely. And so thinking about these holidays, I know you said it earlier, you were like, you know, if we're talking about social justice, like where does this, and those weren't your words, but like, where does this holiday come in at? And social justice for sure comes into this holiday in many different ways. And I think the first part of that is just being truthful about the history. And that's a part, that's a way to be socially just to this whole group of people, in which we can just acknowledge and recognize the history that's there. And then also, this isn't the only holiday too that social justice will come into play, right? Because Halloween is one, And then definitely Christopher Columbus Day,
definitely,
which is hopefully over the years will continue to be changed to Indigenous Peoples Day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just being able to be honest, I guess, and mindfully aware of what this holiday means to not just us, because like I said, I have a personal connection to Thanksgiving. Oh, just, it's a good time to get together with family, but to those that this holiday may actually impact, and they're telling different stories about what right. this day means to them. Right.
Yes. Yes. And I think that that's really important is, and I was reading an article literally right before we got on here to record this. And it was something I'd gotten to my emails, teaching Thanksgiving in a socially responsible way. And so it was talking about certain activities that we might do as families or in schools or with kids, just as like fun, you know, where we're having people, like, I remember dressing up as a Native American and saying, I'm dressing up as an Indian. I remember doing that, you know, and that being taught of like, this is what you do. And now I think back to what that was like, and that was so insensitive, you know? And so that kind of imagery can be very damaging to contemporary, you know, Native peoples you know, just kind of thinking about how we don't think that that's necessarily harmful.
It has been very hard for me to unlearn. Like I definitely was socialized as Christian. And that is like where it's literally like I'm forever in this pit, in this position of like having to earn something that should be so basic. It's something.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really, you know, over the past year, I've learned a lot about how, you know, how pervasive it is. And I was the person, probably like you, who, you know, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one that hated myself and didn't feel good about anything that I did. And then I, you know, actually again started listening and learning, and I was like, oh no, it's a thing. And as a behavior analyst, I get it. I understand how that happens. So. So much. So one of the things that, for me has been so powerful in my own journey towards, you know, of, you know, anti-oppression of just myself first, you know, in my own liberation work, personal liberation, something that has been so powerful for me is music. And so one thing that I want to do for all of our Tipsy Unicorns is create a playlist that is based on, you know, the people that we bring in and are learning from and listening to, kind of identifying pieces like music and songs and things that bring you kind of joy and inspiration. Because I think that can, you know, music can be such a powerful motivator. So what is on your playlist? What's on, you know, what do you have on repeat? What do you go to if you're feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm getting down on myself and I need to get pumped up?
So I'm not kidding. I listen to like all sorts of music, but anybody can probably tell you I never listen to like current things. I don't know what it is about myself. I'm just so big on nostalgia, I think. But Power by Kanye, New Slaves by Kanye, but also like Still the One by Shania Twain and Pursuit of Happiness by Kid Cudi. There's a song, it's called I'll Find You by Tori Kelly. And I can't pronounce the guy's name. It's like Tori Kelly and, oh crap, now I'm blanking. Lecrae, maybe. And that song is I don't know what it is about that song. Like, especially if I'm feeling down. Like, I love that song. It's so inspirational. As anybody probably by now knows, I'm obsessed with Britney Spears. So anything like Britney Spears, like I'm talking about like Toxic. Like, I don't really like Hit Me Baby One More Time. But like, I mean, every time, I mean, I'm obsessed with Britney. I love Whitney Houston. Like, I'm not kidding. I listen to like, I love Lil Wayne, but I mean like old school Lil Wayne. Like, I just listen to the same stuff, I swear to God, that I've listened to since like middle school. But like, it really does. I think you're right as far as like music and things that just kind of make me feel good. I'm like, I want more of that. And so I literally have like a playlist of like all of these random, like Shania Twain and like Lil Wayne, like what? Like random songs. And I love them. Like it's pretty embarrassing. You should see me drunkenly karaoke me some Shania. I do a really good job, I think.
Okay. We're going to have so much fun together. I have CDs of drunken karaoke nights when they were, you know, went back when they made CD recordings of you. Those are a treasure trove.
I do not need that permanent product. I do not need that.
No. I'm not sure if that was a $5 well spent. It's, you know, it's funny that you said, you're talking about how the music from your childhood, that's what you go to. And I never really put those two things together, but I think about, you know, I have my playlist that I go to, and then my husband has his playlist, and you know, it goes from, it's like Jewel to Tupac. Yeah. And then, like, sure, we've got, I think there's a couple, and then there's like Garth Brooks in there. Yes. And it's, you know, it's great. You just put it on shuffle, and it's like,
yes. And know, it's like, it's really funny because I'm always party. Like, I wonder if people listen to this playlist, like what kind of mood they think I'm in. Because it really is like, it'll go like super depressing songs and then like Christian songs and then like gangster rap. And like, I'm like, hopefully they get it.
Yeah. It's just, it's all of you. It's,
yep. There you go.
a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. I love it. So when I was, you know, when I was thinking about this podcast and what all I would do, what I would want to talk about, I really wanted to stay focused on our core mission, which is to support the development of accomplices. There are, you know, there's been so many times in this world, in our society, where there's a big event and there's a, you know, there's an uprising of attention and motivation, and then it wanes, and, you know, and then something else happens, and then we start doing something, and then it wanes again. And I've got a theory that, you know, if we keep doing the same thing, that we're going to keep getting the same results. So we need to do something different. And as a behavioral scientist, you know, I look at the data over, I've, you know, charted the data over past 100 years on a couple different things. And it's like, it's the same, where nothing's changing, nothing's getting better, or in some cases, things are getting worse. And so I really want to stay focused on this idea of tapping in, really listening, really taking to heart what we hear and what we learn, and then learning how to do something with that information. So rather than just like, you know, in one ear, out the other, I know there's a way to do something different. And there's, you know, there are a lot of different models out there. I did a book study earlier this year on the Me and White Supremacy book. And in that book, she introduced the idea of the circle way. And that was, you know, that's something that we emulate within radical action circles, is utilizing the circle way process to facilitate conversations that are action oriented. So rather than just continuing to belabor the same negative points and complain about the status quo, it's taking a different approach. And so what I would like is for you to share your perspectives with us. And I have three kind of guiding questions. And so I'll put them all out there. And then I'll let you decide how you want to, you know, how you want to share your story and your perspectives on these. So the three guiding questions that we have are, how have you personally experienced depression in your personal and professional life? The second is, what does self-liberation look like to you? What does it look and feel like? And then finally, what do you see as the path forward towards collective liberation?
So as far as like my marginalized identities, I'm Black, I'm a lesbian, I'm also a cisgender woman though. So I carry a shit ton of privilege, but simultaneously, I definitely am oppressed. Every time, for example, especially being a military spouse, people automatically assume that I have a husband, and it puts me in this position of like, do I out myself? Is it safe to out myself? Do I, you know, kind of put myself back in the closet or just kind of like passively laugh it off? Like what do I do? And it's not always easy, especially because, you know, I have a learning history that, I mean, I couldn't even like legally get married until like 2014. You know what I mean? But what's so interesting about that identity is that it's so highly reinforced that I feel less fear, for example, about disclosing that. But when it comes to my Blackness, something that I am extremely proud of, something I am extremely radical and committed to as far as Black liberation, that same treatment isn't there. And what that usually kind of looks like is, you know, people are like, hey, Cammy, or like maybe they see me on social media or whatever. But then when they see the kind of stuff that I'm posting, there's like this differential kind of rate of responding or even engagement, such as like likes, comments, whatever. In these posts and then like my non, for example, like Black specific post. Most recently, I think professionally, and that's honestly just like a very small example. I think just being Black in America, I've definitely have experienced downright hate and downright racism. I recently had my dad on the show. And, you know, I was raised by somebody who was born in 1955 who experienced severe, severe oppression. My grandmother literally did maid work like they did in that movie, The Help. I have a long line of legacies of people who have survived racism. And I think for me, I'm with you where I'm just like, we can't keep on doing the same thing and expecting different results. And I think it's very hard, I think, especially for people who are like in my generation, because we were taught that what was better than like that more quote unquote like overt racism that like my father experienced and his mother experienced was this like erasure of identity. This, I don't see color. Black is a bad word. Say African American. Like, don't, you know, like don't say the N word in public, but feel free to say it in private. Feel free to rap it and sing it like when singers and rappers are saying it. And then how this looks professionally is, again, this erasure. And we are kind of questioned, I think, every time, especially we bring our Blackness to the forefront, that I can truly say I am not questioned this way when I bring up my lesbian identity. Recently, I experienced racism by a couple of different behavior analysts in various Facebook groups. And even that, like having to kind of tact it as like, you all understand this is anti-Black, but because it wasn't, for example, them like calling me the N-word, or because it wasn't them explicitly saying like, I can't believe this Black girl or this Black woman is saying or doing this, it was almost like I had to convince certain people, like, do y'all see, like, this is exactly what I mean. Nothing about this is micro, but I guess if you had to try to like scale it or identify it or operationally define it, it would maybe fall under like the response class, I guess, of a microaggression. But like, this is insane. And these are by people who have Black children. These are by people who have Black clients. These are by people who are in my inbox all the time, telling me about this white guilt that they may have, you know, as they're going through whatever this so-called awakening is that they are. And for me, it's exhausting because number one, I don't have, and I've never had the privilege or the luxury to not know what racism is like, be it professionally where I'm called the N-word by clients, or be it, you know, personally where I have, you know, been called that in real life, but also just experience just more of the severe oppression as far as really being actively taught continuously over the last 31 years of my life to hate myself, to hate my brown skin, to wish that I was more fair skinned like my mom, to have to explain to white people like what racism is. And it's exhausting. And I think for me, though, a part of my personal liberation is really learning how to balance my energy. I think for me to be liberated, it has to be an act of self-care and really kind of gauging my MO. And so there are times where I'm in conversations with people and my MO is literally only to make them think. I don't think they're going to act. I don't expect them to engage in any kind of action. Again, I just want to raise their consciousness even just a little bit. I want them to see something. I want us to look at the exact same thing and be like, like this is really, really gendered. Let's interrogate that. Or, like I'm only using Black names when I'm doing a staff training for problem behavior. Let's interrogate that. Or, you know, whatever the case may be, I just sometimes want people to think. But then, yes, my MO oftentimes, or other times, I should say, may be to really kind of connect with people that are willing to do the work. I thank God for the connections that I've made over the past year. I think I've connected with, you know, a lot of behavior analysts like you, like my BAMF admin, co-admin, Gabriella and Amber, like Aaron, like Denisha, like Kristen, and so many others that, number one, keep me accountable. I am not perfect, and I never believe that. I pray I never come across that way. And we're all, I think, just so culturally humble. And I think for me, it's like for my liberation is about that, because I can't be liberated if my sisters and brothers aren't either. And I want to create an environment and a better world so that my niece and my nephew and my godkids don't have to go through this shit. But I know that, like you said, that can't happen without action. So sometimes I just want your action to be engaging in a private event that simply just makes you think. Other times I do want you to act. Other times I am going to call you out. Other times I am going to call you in. Sometimes, like Denisha said, I believe on her status a few days ago, I am going to cancel you. But I also can recycle you. And it's all about, for me, figuring out how all of us kind of can align better with this value of intersectional liberation. And I think once we can do that, and once we absolutely commit to continuously doing that, this world will be a better place.
Committed action, right?
Yeah.
And that's what it's all about. And being, doing what needs to be done because it's the right thing to do. Not because it's hard. I mean, it's hard. It's hard work and it, you know, to do the right thing. But it's, you know, I appreciate the work that you do. I appreciate the calling out and calling in that you do that I have, you know, that I've observed, because it's, you know, that will just continue to build momentum, and it's never done in an angry way. And I think that is the difference, like that we're trying, you know, that us, you know, the group that is the group of behavioral scientists that are coalescing is, to me, the best, like it is the best thing to come out of 2020, honestly. Like I have been so thankful to finally find my people. You know, when I started this journey 4 years ago, I was a disaster because I thought I was all alone, and I was the only person who gave a shit about anything, and no, everybody else wanted to just maintain the status quo and keep doing the same thing, even though there was, it's like, you know, the way they were approaching even clinical practice is out of alignment with humanity and with everything. And I just like, and I didn't know, you know, I didn't know where to go and where to turn and who, like, who, you know, who my allies were or who I could be an accomplice with. It was just yes. like, I just need
and that's
to,
lonely,
you know,
like that is so mm-hmm. lonely. And I think you're right. I think that is one of the best for me, like honest to God, professionally and personally, one of the best things that has come out of such a year in that
yeah.
I finally feel like I am amongst peers and colleagues who, number one, will always require me to be better and that I can also give that back to and hopefully in an effective way. Like I definitely have called people out and behaviorally speaking, it's absolutely punished their behavior. And I'm like, okay, Camille, mm-hmm. like let's try to do it better next yeah. time. I try it again. And if I call them in, if that also punishes their behavior, then I'm like, okay, well you just, that at this point, like it's not on me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And vice versa. Like sometimes people call me out and they call me in and making sure I'm humble to kind of receive that. But yeah, I feel so blessed, honestly, to be just a part of this circle of people who we really do want to see like human liberation and it, yeah. It feels really good.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I think it has something to do with, being able to, you know, I mean, it was like forced slowdown, right? But it was like, no, it's time to get mindful, folks.
Yes. So
get with it.
Yes.
be present because you got nowhere else to be. So yep. Be present.
Absolutely.
One other thing. So, you know, our three rules, our three, you know, our guiding principles, fucking listen, be radical, take action. That, you know, that came to me through a lot of the work that I did in 2020. And was, you know, a part of a pretty amazing group of individuals through the Native movement. And we were working on, you know, decolonization work and what that means. And so that was like, you know, the end of the organizer summit I was a part of, that was like, you know, there are three keys. And I was like, yes, I'm going to own this and I'm going to take this with me and it's going to carry me through. So for our listeners, what would be your three tips to emerging activists who want to do better?
I love your fucking listen. I feel like I have to definitely steal that one.
Yeah.
And really steal like away. Listen with the
not mine.
Yeah. Like, well, and like listening to like really like take it in versus like to comment anything back or, you know what I mean? So I love that fucking listen. Always like really check your MO and if you're honest about your MO, being willing to allow that to kind of change over time, and moment to moment. And honestly, this is so like radical behaviorist, but I mean, truly like remembering that all behavior, I think a Skinner quote, like all behavior makes sense in the context in which it occurs. So really understanding that, you know, we none of us just do things like just because, you know what I mean? And being willing to kind of analyze, okay, well, in what environment is this being maintained? Am I a part of that environment? You know, and then how can I kind of manipulate that environment a little bit better to prompt somebody to be better?
So fucking listen. Yes, please. Let's carry that one through. Yes. I love it. When I heard that one, I was like, yes. check your MO. Okay, so we're going to fucking listen. We're going to check your MO. Why are you doing what you're doing? And all behavior makes sense in context. I love that. In context.
Yeah.
That is, I feel like that's. Okay, so now for the final segment.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. As a behavioral scientist, the first thing that we need to do when we get to know people and want to work with them and want to, you know, be their friends personally and professionally is we need to know what reinforces them. So we are going to do a rapid fire preference survey. Camille Morgan, are you ready for this?
I'm so scared. I'm ready though.
I won't do it. Like we're not gonna rank order. We're not gonna do paired stimulus preference assessment. We're just gonna do a quick survey. Okay. I'll prepare an MSWO for you later.
Thank you.
You need one. Okay. What Number one, what is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Ooh, I don't really like ice cream. Okay. If I had to, though, I would say like cookies and cream.
Cookies and cream. Okay. What is your favorite food of all time?
Fake Mexican food. I love me some Taco Bell, fake? Chipotle, Qdoba, like the fake Mexican food. Those are my faves.
Fake Mexican food. I'm down. I'm down with it. What is your, I think I might know the answer to this one, but what is your favorite TV show?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay, so I think you probably know this. I rewatch Grey's Anatomy all the time. I think, though, my favorite all-time TV show is Will and Grace or A Different World.
Yes.
Like, those are, like, hand in hand.
A Different World. Was that the, like, the robot girl?
Was that? No, so...
No.
A Different World was like the spinoff of the Cosbys, where Denise, like the older daughter, went to college. And I just was like, wow. And I was really sad to find out this was a fake place. I literally thought Hillman was real. I thought I was going to go there. And then it was fake. And it just, but yeah, all time fave.
Crush your childhood dreams. But yes, I do. I remember that. And yes, Will and Grace. That's a good one. Okay. What is your favorite movie?
Ooh. Little Mermaid, hands down.
Little Mermaid, really?
Hands down.
Isn't there are they doing like a live version of that?
Yes. You want to talk about racism? Look up people's reactions to that. The Little Mermaid's going to be black and people are like pissed. And I'm like, wow. It's Chloe and Haley. Like, I think it's Haley, who's going to play Ariel. I'm so excited. My second all-time, though, is Moana. Like, I'm obsessed.
Yes. Okay. Two very solid choices. And I will look up that controversy because...
It's bad.
You know, it's... Yes, I can only imagine in the Twitterverse in the comment section is full of gems that should be buried deep somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I am a bit of a musical person, and I don't know if you are. I haven't heard.
Absolutely.
But I would like to know, what instrument do you know how to play, or do you like to play, or do you wish you could play?
Okay, so fun fact, I was like second chair playing the flute in like seventh grade. And I just like, that was like my, you know, that was the peak of my musical career. I wish I knew how to play the piano. Like, I always wanted to be like one of those people that can just like sit in front of a baby grand and play a piano. And everybody's like, it's not too late to learn. I do feel like it's too late to learn for me. So yeah. Or like the guitar, something like that.
Awesome. I took piano lessons when I was little, and then I, you know, didn't do anything for a long time. And then I was at the church here locally. There was a group of people that came up, and I wanted to start playing with the ministry band.
Yeah.
And they needed a piano player. And I was like, okay. So this lady did some lessons with me. And so I'm like, now I can kind of jam out, but I really want to create like a precision teaching based, like piano. I don't know if anybody's done that yet, but
I would absolutely be in your study if you do that.
Okay.
Please. Like, I would be in your study 100%.
Okay. I will definitely take you up on that. If this wish comes to fruition, you will learn. Anybody can learn anything with direct instruction and precision teaching.
There you go.
So the next question, I know that you were a cheerleader when you were growing up. And so I'm assuming that you are a dancer as well in some way, shape, or form. So what is your favorite style of dance?
Ooh. So I was actually on the hip hop dance team in undergrad and I loved it. Like, loved it. You're a good guesser.
So I think that, so you know, Dr. Sellers, Tyra Sellers did the holiday showcase.
Yeah.
We should definitely put a dance crew together because I was on the drill team and
let's do
my
it.
first, My first, when I started my graduate program at the University of Washington, I worked in the data project at the experimental education unit. And we actually did, I can't even remember like why we did it, but like all the different classrooms, the teachers had like this dance off and it was pretty epic. Totally bring that back. So the next one is, what is your favorite way to travel?
Ooh. So if I'm traveling alone by car, if I'm traveling like with like Jamie or somebody else by plane, I don't like flying alone, but it is like my preferred method, but like only with somebody else.
Okay. Okay. This is kind of a funny one.
Okay.
So I went to a lot of carnivals and things when I was little, or in growing up, and it was just brought so much joy to me. And I don't know if anybody else does, but if you were a carnival person, what is your favorite ride at a carnival?
Okay, so carnies freak me the fuck out, first of all. Like, so I just really want to be painfully clear. And so do heights. I have a fear of heights. So I would be like one of those rides, like the teacups or whatever, like those ones that are like on the ground, safe and secure. And like, you just like spin. I'm not kidding. Like, I won't even do one of those like merry-go-rounds. And I always thought those like looked so romantic, and no, like, and I'm such a control freak. Like, I have to be in control all the time. So it has to be something like stationary on the ground. Also, I'm terrified of clowns, so I probably won't be going to a carnival with you.
Okay. But maybe we'll take a trip to Florida to go visit Aaron and Kristen. We'll go to Disneyland or Disney World.
There you
go. We'll go to the small world. We'll keep it simple.
Yes.
We've got gentle rides there. Awesome. Okay. So I've got two last questions. I know that you seem to be the type of person who likes to take care of themselves. What is your favorite body product?
Ooh. So I actually have been trying to like tell people about this. So you're like the first person I've ever told publicly. My new like body care secret is, when you're in the shower, like still in the shower, like before you get off, put on coconut oil. And if you put on coconut oil and then like you dry off, the way your skin feels, like, and you have to do it like while your skin is still wet. I'm not kidding. And like your skin's all moisturized and you smell like coconut. Like, what better smell than that? That is literally, I'm not kidding, the cheapest and like the best thing I've ever done for my skin. Like, I'm obsessed. Like, that is my all-time favorite product.
I love it. And I am actually hip to this.
Yes. So you get it. It's good.
Yes, absolutely. We live in Alaska now, and so, like, you know, I'm always, like, fully clothed, double layers. Mm-hmm. But when we lived in Arizona and I, you know, had, you know, skin to show, that was definitely part of my care routine. So that's awesome. Yes. I love that.
Love it.
Okay. And final question. It's a simple one. What is your favorite color?
Ooh, teal. Anybody who knows me, like, teal, like that turquoise teal, that's... it's all me. I'm obsessed. Obsessed.
I love it. Yes.
What's your favorite color?
My favorite color is purple.
I swear to you, I was like, she's a purple girl. Like, I knew it in my head. This makes me, we're like connected. We like have this like telepathic thing going on.
Yes, we are. We are indeed. So, Cami, you are amazing, and I really appreciate you. This has been a lot of fun, and I wish that we could just keep talking all night, and I bet you that we could. But one of the things that I am really passionate about and wanting to make sure is a core part of what we do is giving our gifts of gratitude. So I have been, you know, gratitude, gratitude journals, like that. I feel like that's the word of the year. And you do so much for this world. And I believe that you are going to do even more amazing things in the years to come. We're still very young. I know that Sarah likes to say that she's old, but I'm about as old as she is.
Not.
And it's bullshit. I'm gonna talk to that girl about that. because I'm turning 40 and I'm like, I don't know. We're
not
young.
Old at all.
We've got so many years ahead of us, and I'm really excited to see where this journey takes us together and with our, you know, with the crew that is coalescing and developing. So I'm super excited. But I would like our listeners and our tipsy unicorns to be able to share their love with you. And I would like them to do that through becoming patrons of yours through your Patreon and supporting Black women worldwide. So could you please tell us a little bit about your work and how people can support you?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you. So I, on Patreon, I believe the Patreon is just under Love, Sex, and Applied Behavior Analysis. I don't think podcast is on the end of it. I think it's just Love, Sex, and Applied Behavior Analysis. And the Patreon support, it's like, it starts at $5 a month and it caps at $25 a month. And then within each of those, it has different tiers. Fun fact, if you do the $25 a month one, we're like taking tequila shots with each other monthly, having like monthly meetups, just kind of like getting to know each other better. So do that. And then for Black Women Worldwide, so it's a nonprofit. There's definitely ways that everybody can kind of donate. Oftentimes I'll kind of just do like a donation thing, like on Facebook, if anybody wants to donate that way. But otherwise, if you go to Black, and for this one, it's BLV as in Victor, CK Women, which is WOMX as in xylophone, in, and then worldwide.org. You can go ahead and donate there. And yeah, just support us all.
I love it. Okay, well, I would like to extend an invitation to everyone listening to join us on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Alaska time, which is 11 Pacific and 2 Eastern, for Radical Action Circles, where every Saturday we will be meeting and gathering as a group to learn and grow together as emerging activists and become the change catalysts and accomplices that we dream to be, and share our wisdom in the service of generating action potential to maintain our anti-oppression activism. And we're not going to slow down and we're not going to stop. We're going to keep going. I like to think of action circles as like the generator, or like the, you know, I don't know, like the, I kind of get this visualization of like the witch,
like the spoon.
Witch's,
there you go. I was
cauldron.
Just about to say this.
Yeah.
The spoon from Hocus Pocus. Yes.
get in our vessel, baby.
Yes.
We're gonna make some things happen. So I'm very grateful for this partnership with Beautiful Humans, and Action for a Peaceful World coming together. And I am excited to be on this journey with you. So thank you, everybody, and let's FBT.
Hey, it's Denisha.
And Erin.
I just wanted to take the time here to let you know that if you're thinking about doing a podcast, there's a way for you to do a show without having to become an audio editing and production wizard.
Yeah, you know, we probably would have never gotten the show off the ground if it wasn't for Pretty Easy Podcast. So Pretty Easy Podcast helps podcasters get their shows recorded and posted with a complete podcast studio at your disposal. Record from your home or your office or at the park. Pretty Easy Podcast caters to your schedule and gives you a producer for your show at your beck and call.
So if you have an idea for a show and you need someone to rely on to help you get it done, go to prettyeasypodcast.com and sign up today. Be heard and have some fun podcasting. You know you want to do it, so go to prettyeasypodcast.com today.
Putting forward is you're focused more on the process, right? Is what you were saying is, I don't know. It's not necessarily how do we control the entire environment to make sure that our independent variable is the cause of the change in the dependent variable, more or less, like, how are we treating people, you know, and how do you behaviorally define that? Or I don't know. It's just, I think there's so much value in that. And oftentimes that, that gets pushed to the side and not viewed as important. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. You're making total sense. And I think the point that I have is, like, I think when it comes to cultural variables, they're very difficult to identify and measure. And I think as behavior analysts, that's very scary. For example, like, cultural variables are private events. So, like, it's hard to just identify, like, hey, I follow that cultural variable. Like, as I was reading a lot of the research from different cultures, I was like, oh, hey, yeah, I totally do that. My family does that. But that's not something that I can just test. And I think that's what makes it so hard for behavior analysts. It's not necessarily observable. You may have to ask a lot of questions. You might have to have some, you know, knowledge in other areas, other fields about different groups in order to ask the correct questions to get the information that you need to provide effective services. And I think it would be super useful in behavior analysis. I actually saw this presentation at WIBA last year. Patricia Wright, I think her name was.
Oh, yeah.
And she talked about how sometimes as behavior analysts, we look at things through a pinhole. And if we are to sort of, if we were to widen the way that we look at things and behavior and measuring things, that would be helpful in capturing some of the cultural variables that we may not be doing in research or looking at in research.
I like what you said there about, you know, needing to pinpoint just a little bit more. I will tell you, you know, for as long as I've been a behavior analyst, I've asked the question very blankly at first, right? Are there any cultural variables cultural practices that you think that we should be aware of? And it doesn't matter what culture, everyone always says no, no, no. Why is very, it's like, it's not cultural. It's unique. It's independent. It's mine. Like, and so then you start asking, oh, okay, well, I noticed that you asked for me to take my shoes off when I came in the door. Is that something that's important to you? Oh, I noticed that you all sit at the table together, you know, at 6 p.m. and gather. I noticed that you said a prayer, like, you know, and then just being able to say, like, this is the behavioral things that I've noticed. Like, what else can we, you know, say is important to you that kind of gets you thinking about, oh yeah, like, my family, we have our own cultural unit. We do these things. This is important to us as a whole. And so just asking that blanket statement, and I always start there, but I, you know, move out to, you know, the smaller, more tangible and measurable things. But just leaving it there, you would get, at least me personally, I would get nothing. I would literally have everyone telling me that they have no culture at all to even consider. And it's like, oh yeah, but you want your child to address me as Miss Denisha. That's a cultural, you know what I mean? That's a value to you. And so we can consider that as well. So, yeah, I like that you brought up that at least having some type of information or being able to ask a little bit more in detail is going to be useful in determining what are some of these cultural components.
Absolutely. Like if you ask me about things in my own culture, like, I'd probably be able to identify them, but I can't just, like, give you a list at all. You know, it's just stuff that I do. So
right.
I think another area.
Just a truthful and just direction. And that's with the data. The evidence.
I like what you said about planting a seed, because in my experience, people who are wanting to engage in these conversations, with their opinions or something, are not having these conversations to have their mind changed.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said to me
one time or currently, it was for the survival of, you know, their family.
Effect of, it's really hard to have a rational conversation with somebody who didn't get to, like, to some place, like, in a rational way. And so, like, some of these really emotional responses that people will give and kind of, like, opinions or that are not grounded in data or evidence or fact,
are going to be, it's really hard to engage in a conversation with them in a rational way. And so when you said plant the seed, you can say what you want to say, but you don't have to engage in that conversation that is irrational opinions and things like that. And I say irrational just because it's not based on data. It's not.
Right.
If you actually value this, do your actions line up with your values? And then when you're looking at, okay, I want to look, change the makeup of the BCBAs that I'm hiring, right? Asking yourself, why am I not hiring more minority BCBAs or, you know, BCBAs who have a different sexuality orientation or geographical location or religion or whatever. And then once you figure out the why, then looking at your task analysis of how do I then change that? So I think there's different components that someone needs to think about. Number one, first, what path you want to take? Are your values lining up with your actions? And then creating the task analysis from there.
And I agree with those 3 points, but I think the number one thing that individuals and companies need to do is first really assess, am I doing this because of the moment, or am I actually interested in wanting to see a change? Because if it's for the moment, there is no sustainability. If you really want to see a change and you really feel that there are some injustices that are being done across the board, across all spans,